Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm not ready. I'm eating chocolate, but it's fine.
Hello, and welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is a podcast with the unpopular opinion that progressive politics has a lot to offer the modern world. I'm your host, Hannah Shah, and I'm joined by the Chair of Progress, Alison McGovern MP. So, today is International Women's Day, and it's not only a vitally important day for gender equality, but also a day with a long and dramatic socialist history. Now, we all know Ali as the brilliant MP and campaigner that she currently is.
Oh, stop.
Oh no, I'm going to carry on being flattering. But I thought this week it would be a good idea to get to know the woman behind the incisive economic analysis and impressive football knowledge. So, Ali, I guess the first question is, what made you want to have a career in politics? Is it something you always wanted to do?
I was always interested. And I suppose in politics, being a member of parliament is a job that people have heard of. And I kind of wanted to be involved and join the Labour Party when I was at university, although I wasn't involved in Labour students.
Oh, that makes you feel a lot better, because yeah, I wasn't either.
I really was not involved in Labour students. At the time, there was a big fiery debate going on about tuition fees, and it was a very different fee structure and proposal that had been introduced then than we have now. And I was, how can I put this? I was much more excited by the Labour government's plan for paid for childcare for the first time in our country's history than I was bothered by some of the very, very wealthy people who were around me at university having to make some sort of contribution, you know, given the relative level of privilege. So I was not engaged with Labour students at all, but no, I joined and a bit later on, I did some leaflets and stuff for the local party when I was at uni, but wasn't really involved. And then later on, when I started working, I got involved with my local Labour Party in Southwark, got really quite involved. And one thing led to another. You know, I remember being sat in a branch meeting one of the first times. And the lovely Kirsty McNeil, who is a very, very good friend of mine and a senior bod at Save the Children these days, Kirsty sort of came over to me and was like, "Hey, how are you doing? Like, going out campaigning at the weekend? Do you want to come?" And I was sort of like, "Oh, well, okay." Didn't really know what it involved. And they were doing a petition to improve the kind of social housing locally. And that I felt like this is what I want to do. And then a bit later on, I became a councillor, and I'd always sort of really thought that I would go home to Merseyside at some point. And as I was saying, one thing led to another. My predecessor retired, and so I decided that would be that, and that my own journey, I suppose, was indicative of something that I thought was wrong about our country, which is that the reason why I went to London University was because when I was growing up, there just weren't enough kind of opportunities and careers available. Look, people could stay in Merseyside and get a job and a career, but there just weren't quite enough opportunities like that. And a lot of the opportunities seem to be like in London. So I thought to myself, well, I'd quite like opportunities, so I will go to London. And it was only when I was there, I realised how stark the regional inequality was.
Yeah.
And so the reason I suppose I really thought I would like to be a parliamentarian is because I would like other people not to have to feel that they have to leave the place where they love and where they grew up to have the kind of opportunities that they would like. And that was why I decided to be a member of parliament.
That's a really nice story. That's really heartwarming.
Well, I don't know about heartwarming, but that was how it happened. And it's been an amazing journey because I feel very lucky to represent the area that I was mm-hmm. born in, that I grew up in, and that I really love. It's an incredible kind of community, very close. Everyone knows each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we have a kind of like saying, like, that's the Wirral, like, you know, you can, if you meet someone else from the Wirral, like, you probably, the chances are you'll have some connection.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing kind of opportunity to be the representative for the place where your primary school teachers still live. You know, like sometimes I'll be like canvassing people and they'll be like, oh, hello, Alison. You know, do you remember me? You went to school with my daughter and, you know, and I will have last seen them when I was 7.
Yeah. And they'll still know who you are. And that's a really nice sense of community.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're an MP now, of course. Is being an MP what you expected when you first thought about it?
I think in some ways it is, yeah. I mean, a lot of the things that people really get a lot out of, talking to people, listening to what their constituents have got to say, the impact that you can have, it is what you would expect. And it is really, really motivating sometimes when you see the, for want of a better expression, shit that people are dealing with.
Yeah.
Trying to break down some of the institutional barriers to get things right for people is very satisfying. You know, I've recently had a couple of people come to surgery who've been victims of domestic violence, mm-hmm. who've then been, because of the knock-on of that, have been in debt or have been having difficult benefits, problems. And you see that stuff and it's a privilege to talk to those people and to listen to them. And then we can do something about it. And that is what I thought it would be. And that's why I wanted to do it. I mean, Brexit wasn't expected. Mm. And that has been a complete and total nightmare from the word go, you know. So I, in some ways, didn't see that coming. But much of it, yeah. No, it's a very rewarding job. And if people are wondering whether or not they ought to do it, I think I would always say to people, err on the side of yes. Because it's, you know, chances come few and far between. And so if you operate as if, you know, you would like to do something, then you might get that chance and then it's really worthwhile.
Fantastic. And on a slightly less happy and heartwarming note, because at the moment it sounds very empowering and I love it. International Women's Day is all about empowering women. But to go for the protest side of International Women's Day, we hear a lot about Westminster politics being a very male-dominated environment and a lot about the power structures that women have sort of struggled against within Westminster. Why do you think that exists, or why do you think that's been the case?
Oh, I think that's just history. That's just, you know, the force of history imposing itself on people who don't have those values today, mm-hmm. or wouldn't otherwise have those values today. And actually, Rachel Reeves is just one of my colleagues from Leeds West, is just releasing her new book, The Women of Westminster, in which she tells the story of the very first women who were elected. I mean, most people could probably tell you that Nancy Astor was the first woman to take up her seat. They probably don't know much about Margaret Wintringham, who was the second MP.
Yeah.
They know even less about number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6. You know, people might know a bit about Ellen Wilkinson, who was a very early MP, very small, petite, but fiery. they used to call her the fiery atom. Woman MP who was a Labour MP who was a really, really strong campaigner on the rights of women and working people. But like, people, there are few and far between that anybody's ever really heard of. And that wasn't necessarily an accident, although it may have been unconscious, because when Nancy Astor first came into the house, I think I'm right in saying she said that, you know, her male colleagues would have rather had a rattlesnake in the chamber rather than her. And that's true, because they didn't want to upset the power structures. So the hiding of women and the early women pioneers in politics was to try and diminish their contribution, in my view. And that's why we feel that force of history even today. Like, women's contributions are constantly forgotten because it upsets the power balance and people don't like that.
And maybe you'll know the answer to this, but I feel like a piece of trivia I've heard is that in the gallery in the House of Lords, they used to have little curtains so you couldn't see women's legs.
Still do.
They still do?
Yeah. The ladies' gallery has curtains. Yeah. Because there was some culture that, like, young women would go to the House of Lords, like, to
hang out.
To like, be seen, right? So
look for a husband in the House of Lords, ladies. Yeah. Heard it here first.
Right. And, like, I mean, it's a bit like how when women first started to play football at the turn of the last century, it was actually really successful. Like, crowds of, like, 50,000 by the 1920s. And, you know, it was, men didn't like it, so they banned women for 50 years. And the same is true of the House of Commons. It's not like one continuous sweep of progress. Like, most people in this country cannot name the first woman cabinet minister. Margaret Bonfield. Most women cannot name her. Why? Because she was part of Ramsay MacDonald's government that was seen to be, you know, betraying of the labour movement, and didn't in the end have a successful means of standing against global economic problems. But everyone can remember Ramsay MacDonald, you know?
Yeah. Like,
so there's this constant process of trying, I think, to submerge the achievements of women. And that's why Rachel's book's important, but it's why today, even in the House of Commons today, like, we have to be vigilant against the lack of recognition of the work of women in politics.
Absolutely. And I know there are far more brilliant women in Parliament than there have been historically now, and that you're all very supportive of each other. In fact, there's a great photo exhibition of all the MPs. It was up in Portcullis House, but you tell me, now it's moved to Liverpool.
It has. It's now at the Open Eye Gallery in Liverpool. So 209 Women is a brilliant exhibition. And we talked a little bit about it on the Christmas podcast. Mm-hmm. I think it's an artist collective project to create a fine art photography piece of all of the 209 women members of Parliament. And it's really very good. And most women in politics have never had their portrait painted, have, you know, the place is full of works of art of great men. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, fine. But even when there's been quite a lot of women elected, we don't have an oil painting of Margaret Bonfield or Margaret Winteringham or any of the early pioneers. We just don't have them. It wasn't seen to be appropriate, even though those women were elected and were absolute pioneers of their own right. So we are slowly but surely kind of getting to grips with how we not just do our politics, but also tell our story in a completely different way. I mean, I think it's striking in recent years how, if you think about the kind of Labour side of politics, you've got the Blairites, the Brownites, the Corbynistas. Nobody ever, ever, ever mentions a woman as having led a group of politicians in that way.
No woman could possibly have their own ideas, Addy. Come on.
I know. Silly me. But, like, why not? Why not? You know, I was a founder member of Liz Kendall's campaign to be leader of the Labour Party. Nobody has ever, ever thought of me as a Kendallite.
Yeah.
It's... But bizarre.
I do. I find it really frustrating because people come up to me and they say, you're an X, you're a Y. And I was like, I'm not an X or a Y. I have my own opinions on things. Some of them agree with Blair, some of them agree with Brown, some of them don't agree with either of them.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
And also, like, those men who've led the Labour Party, you know, they dealt with stuff that is no longer a question. Mm. And there are questions now that were just not on the agenda when they were leading the Labour Party. So why we would constantly, you know, exist in a frame of their making, I have no idea.
Now, let's take a quick break before our quick fire round. And if you haven't already, share the love and share this podcast with a feminist friend.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I think it's time to say the serious bit's over. I've got some quick fire questions
for you.
Are you ready?
Oh my goodness. This is not like a quiz, is it?
It's not like a quiz,
okay,
no.
Okay, because you know I don't like quizzes.
I know you don't like quizzes, and I know I've written quizzes and they haven't gone very well. And it's
yeah,
stressful.
I'd never forgive you if you tried to make me do a quiz, Hannah.
It's kind of a quiz about you.
Oh my goodness.
But it's not a quiz about facts about you, because that would be weird, obviously.
Yeah, that would be weird. And also I probably wouldn't know them, and then that would be really weird.
But it's more just a little bit about your experience. So I guess, what's your best moment been so far as an MP?
My best moment?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. My best moment. Okay, well, there's been a lot of kind of quite negative stuff, but actually a real high point, and I probably shouldn't say this because we did break the rules to do it, but seeing Hannah Bardell do Keep Your Pete in the Chamber was hilarious.
Oh, I love that. That was brilliant.
And it's a little known fact that it was me who made the video of her doing it. So,
well, now everyone knows.
So I would say that was probably one of the real moments of fun that has been had over the past couple of years.
Brilliant. And sort of the other side, what's the worst moment been?
Joe being murdered.
Yeah.
Nothing prepared me for that.
And what's your best canvassing story?
Oh my goodness. Well, everybody's got a naked man, right? So everybody who's ever been on a Labour door knock has at some point had the door opened to them by a naked man. I once had a campaigner go for a wee on the wall of a house.
Oh, brilliant.
Next door to where I was door knocking, which wasn't so great. And, you know, I really, really didn't know where to look. And then someone had to say to him, look, you can't do that. You really can't do
it's
that.
It's really not appropriate for the situation.
Really not appropriate. And goodness me, canvassing stories. I had one that was kind of funny and kind of like heartbreaking at the same time. Mm. I was having this discussion with a gentleman about immigration. And never shy away from discussion on immigration.
Nope.
Always have it. Most importantly, listen to what people have got to say. Because, like, especially in the context of the European Union, a lot of the problems that people perceive about immigration are actually to do with migration to this country that's nothing to do with the European Union, like from
absolutely.
Outside. So, you know, you've always got to be really careful and make no assumptions and listen to people. So I'm like listening to this gentleman saying that he doesn't like immigration very much, and he has an issue with social housing, and he said, you know, that there was a family from Turkey who had come to an estate, the Mill Park estate in my mm-hmm. constituency, which is, you know, nice place to live, there's quite a lot of social housing that's very popular, and he was saying that they'd been given a social home on the Mill Park, and what an outrage this was, and it had been given it ahead of local families.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, well, look, the rules do prioritize people with kids, and you know, we can have a discussion about whether how we could get more homes locally and blah, blah, blah. And he's an absolute high dudgeon, absolute outrage. But the fact is, I do know my constituency very, very well.
Yeah.
And because, you know, members of parliament are quite busy, there isn't a takeaway in my constituency that I don't know personally. And so when he says to me, and then that family, they opened a kebab shop in Eastern Village. And I said to him, sir, come on now. There isn't a kebab shop in Eastern Village. it kind of broke the ice. But yeah, I might write a book about door knocking one day and all of the funny things that happen.
I think so. What's your favourite, I hope you have one, but what's your favourite pre-speech hype track?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So, well, it probably would be one of my general election songs.
Okay. So I know you have those.
I do. Every general election, I always like have a song that is like on the radio at the time or for whatever reason. So I would definitely listen to my general election songs, I think. So in 2010, it was Florence and the Machine, Dog Days Are Over. That Absolutely. Came out at the time. It was off and on in the car. And I don't know, it's really upbeat. In 2015, do you remember that Rihanna, Paul McCartney, 4 or 5 seconds thing?
Yes.
Yeah, so that is the one from 2015. And I don't really know why. Again, I think it just came out at the time and I really liked it and it was always on. In 2017, it was Entrance and Set You Free, which is an old school, early 90s dance track.
Amazing.
And the reason why that was our 2017 general election track is because there is a bar in New Ferry near where my constituency office lives. Where my constituency office is. And it seemed like every time we were going out campaigning, that bar was pumping out Set You Free by Entrance. So that was my 2017 general election song. And I think, yeah, for me, listening to those pieces of music just takes me back to those three elections. And you know, there's something deeply emotional about an election in that you spend all your time just doing like the same small tasks time after time after time. You know, go to a person, find that person, talk to them, listen to them, find out where they are, try to understand, knock on the next door, find that person, listen to them, understand them, try and understand, you know, again and again and again. And being able to do an election is about being able to do like small and simple tasks over and over and again and do them really well. And so you kind of get in the mindset of seeing polling day, understanding what's all of this work that you need to do. And then you just become like really immersed in it. And the emotion of elections just absolutely takes over. And so those are like really important political moments. So it would always be, one of the three of my general election songs.
One of the three big songs, yeah. I remember before the first time I recorded the podcast as host, I know you have very good and very extensive music taste. And Ali was like, okay, what's your hype song? And I don't think I've ever been as nervous about anything in my entire life as I was like, okay, which of my terrible choice of music songs will impress Ali? And I was like, no, not that one. It can't be something from Hamilton. Come on, Henna.
I think this is a great new idea for the podcast. I think we should have podcast, we should make podcast playlists.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, I mean, I have a terrible taste in music, but it's going to be mainly sort of 90s R&B.
That's okay. I think that's okay. If you can make it work, you can make it work. Like we should create some kind of like a podcast playlist so that people, after they, I don't know, been listening to the podcast, walking their dog or whatever, can then flick over to the Spotify playlist.
And it goes nice and quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep the pace up. Okay. Last quick fire question. Who is your favorite feminist and why? Do you have one?
Well, probably Barbara Castle.
Okay, go on.
So obviously Harriet Harman was my constituency MP, and I think she's a total hero and is really, you know, amazing person. I also know her and have worked with her. And so it's a little bit different. But if I were to pick somebody who I didn't know, and, you know, somebody who I have from having read their life story think is completely like a really, really crucial figure, I would say Barbara Castle, because Firstly, because she lived through the Second World War and has an amazing tale of having become a local councillor in Camden just after the Second World War, mm-hmm. and what that was like, dealing with the consequences of war in a London borough were like, you know, literally kind of having to work out how to pick up the bits of rubble, how to deal with like genuine food shortages that you know, even with today's food bank problems and all the rest of it, you know, people were dealing with the necessities of life in a way that I think that too often we forget about. Then she goes into Parliament and was absolutely pioneering. So the kind of generation of MPs of which she was a part were one of the first to do surgeries at all. Mm. A lot of members of Parliament didn't even go that much to their constituencies, much less come from there, much less like try and actually listen to people. So they started them being much more of a culture of actually listening to people. Then, you know, she becomes minister. She was a transport minister. She couldn't drive. I mean, like, imagine the chutzpah of that, right? You're a woman minister in charge of men and their cars, and she herself couldn't drive and was the person who introduced the seatbelt. I mean, amazing political skill. Eventually she became, so she was part of the anti-common market campaign with Tony Benn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was not a pro-European at all, but eventually became a member of the European Parliament. And actually, if you read her autobiography, which if people haven't read her autobiography, I would really recommend it. It's called Fighting All the Way. And it's absolutely...
I'll make sure there's a link in the description.
Yeah, do. Because it's an absolutely brilliant story. And towards the end of that book, she talks about Jacques Delors going to TUC in 1988 and explaining that, you know, countries would keep their own identity, they would keep their own culture as part of what was becoming the European community, but that... that actually what we needed was solidarity across countries. She became a member of the European Parliament, leader of the British delegation at a certain point, and she became a pro-European. And so to go on that journey, to me, demonstrates open-mindedness, bravery, expert political skill. So, Barbara Castle.
Fantastic. Very finally, do you have any tips for aspiring women in politics?
Probably just do it, because if you think too much about it, you know, you never will. So sometimes you just got to take decisions. Just do it. I would say these days, I think I would definitely say try not to obsess too much about criticism, because especially social media wise, it's very easy to find criticism of yourself. And I think, you know, I think to... when I was sort of first starting out, when I was first, especially when I first had to do telly, you know, it's like really, really not that great to be on television and then see what people say about it afterwards. And it could really put you off. So don't listen to it. Like, I'm very happy and comfortable in my body shape these days, but I haven't always been. And I think it would have really crushed me if I'd allowed it to. So I would say, just do it. Try to keep criticism in perspective and be clear about what you're in it for. And then it's always a choice. Like, if you feel like you got a duty to be involved or whatever, then that's very good. But also recognize that we don't have to put up with people's bad behavior because of that duty. It's always a choice.
Great. Thanks a lot, Alison. Thank you for listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. Take a look at our show notes for a link to the Barbara Castle book that Ali mentioned, and also a great article I found from 2014 with 5 books that Alison thinks that all politicos should read by women. Have a fantastic International Women's Day. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. See you next time for our live podcast. Have a great weekend. You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was One in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons, and many thanks to our fantastic and long-suffering producer, Caroline Crampton.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.